So who with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 78. Hope you all enjoyed, well, I guess it wasn't last week, the week before's episode, because this week it's all about the Death Star. As always, I'm Mikey B, and I'm joined by my co-host, Caitlin.
Hello.
Welcome back, Caitlin. I know it's been a bit of a while. And we also have Gina joining us again. It's been like, what, a year for you, Gina, since maybe Indie PopCon last year?
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, it's definitely been a while. But we're glad to have you back, because Donya couldn't make it, and neither could Ben, so we have a completely different set of people doing today's show, which I'm really excited about, because we're going to talk about the Death Star, the first of three planet-destroying super weapons. So I guess maybe I shouldn't be so excited about it. But anyway, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at our radio podcast, leave a comment on our Facebook, send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hyperbolt.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free, including the new Phasma book, which is absolutely wonderful as an audiobook. I'm listening to it actually right now as we speak. Well, not as we speak, as I'm speaking, but I'm listening to it this week right now. I was listening to it on my drive to work the other day, and it's awesome. Or the latest Princess Leia book, Leia, Princess of Alderaan. That book was phenomenal. It's an easy read or an audiobook, which is really nice. So definitely check those out. Also, we have launched our Patreon. Check it out at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Some perks include our Discord chat, including the recording studio, where you can join us live, hear all the mistakes that I make, or Danya's comments about me and hockey. We have movie nights. Yeah, right, Caitlin? Our movie nights, which our next movie night is going to be the Clone Wars movie, which is on Netflix, so you can all join along and watch us, or the audio will be up afterwards. We also have some After Dark episodes. Our first episode is available for anyone to download, even if you're not a Patreon member, so you can check it out. After Dark episodes tend to include stuff that really won't make the show. If you can't support us via Patreon, that's okay. We also have merchandise available on our website. T-shirts and button packs are available on our website. Tell your friends, wear them, support the Resistance. It's a cool shirt to wear to maybe the Last Jedi premiere in December. Who knows? I think it's time for the news. All right, guys.
Yay.
So we have an interesting bit of news. It was really funny. Some of this news was designed for last week's show, which we didn't have because of unforeseen circumstances. So Mark Hamill tweeted when the next Star Wars The Last Jedi trailer is going to be released. Basically, he said, watch Monday Night Football on Monday, October 9th for no particular reason. And then about 3 to 4 hours later, his tweet was deleted. And everyone's like, wait a minute, but we all saw this. Well, guess what? In the week time since he tweeted that, it has now been confirmed that during Monday Night Football on October 9th, we will see, you know, the Last Jedi trailer. What do you guys think about this?
Yay!
I'm so glad it's, just over a week away?
I know, it's just over, just over a week away. But yeah, it's one of those things where I'm super excited for a new The Last Jedi trailer. I will be honest with you, I'm not a huge, huge football fan, but, you know, I'm all for the new trailer, so it's okay.
Do we know who's playing that time?
Yeah, I'll probably wait till it airs and watch it on YouTube.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's really funny is last time they aired something during a football game, because they've done this for like The Force Awakens and Rogue One. But what ends up happening is they end up releasing it on YouTube like a little bit before it actually airs on TV. I'm going to tell everyone, this is Mikey's special super secret trick. If you really want to be like one of the first people to see it, just because like last time I was one of the, when I was on YouTube, it was probably like, I think it said, oh geez. Like, I think there was like 4 views before me. It was like, it was super low. It was like ridiculous. All you have to do is go to youtube.com/Star Wars, which is the official Star Wars YouTube. And just during that time frame when the game's playing, just refresh it every so often, because it'll say, as soon as it posts there, like it'll be up on the newest video that they have, so you can hit play and you'll be one of the first people to see it. So I just sit on the Star Wars YouTube website and I tend to just continue to hit Command R refresh. You know, I think I did that for an hour straight nonstop when I was waiting for the last trailer to pop up. So you might not need to be just like me, but you could if you really wanted to see it before anyone else and stake that claim. Okay. Anyway, yeah. So Mark Hamill left the trailer out of the bag, if you will, and it got deleted. But now it's confirmed, so we will see a new trailer coming October 9th. I am beyond ecstatic about this.
Is this the full trailer?
It'll be a full trailer. It'll be the second full trailer. Because remember, we got the first trailer, and we've done trailer breakdowns of it. Then we got the behind-the-scenes footage, and then we haven't had another trailer since then. Is this our last trailer? I highly doubt that, because, you know, between October and December, I'm sure they're going to ramp up and release lots of TV spots and hopefully a couple more, like, full trailers. But is there any hopes?
Or at least different cut ones.
Any hopes and dreams in this? Like, I really want to see... I want to see Luke. I want to see more Luke. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I love that Rey's in it. And I love Finn. And I love Rose. And I love, you know, Phasma. Because I think Phasma's awesome. But I want to see more Luke in this trailer. Like, after...
I want more.
Yeah, after like, the way they ended the last trailer, it was like... It's time for the Jedi to end. I'm like, what, Luke? I need more. So, do you guys agree? Like, do you want more Luke, or is it like, I kind of just want a little even of everything? Like, I don't know.
I want more Luke, but I also want a little Kylo Ren. Like, I don't want to be spoiled on Rey. Like, I want to see Rey in the movie, but I don't want to be spoiled on her journey quite yet. So, I kind of want to get a tidbit of what we're gonna get from Kylo Ren, because I feel like, they really haven't focused too much on him.
Other than
in the TV trailers that we've gotten, which, I mean,
no, I agree with you. Other than like the Vanity Fair, like posted, I guess the one sheet, like the thing of him. There really hasn't been much about Kylo Ren, which is okay. I will say I think they expected him to be a bigger character in The Force Awakens. Like a more popular character, than he was. But at the same time, like, he definitely is a good character. I will say, I'm kind of excited for specifically in this specific film, he's going to be without the mask. At least I feel like he's going to be without the mask more, because all the pictures and everything we have of him is without masks. So I feel like he's going to take it off and just own up to being Kylo Ren and Moody without a mask on. Although he's definitely more intimidating with the mask, except when he throws that tantrum. Anything else? Any hopes about the trailer coming on October 9th? No? Caitlin? Jenna? Gina? No?
No.
All right.
It's certainly not a new hope.
Those are my bad jokes. Anyway, moving on to the... moving on to the next bit of news. Star Wars fans petition to remove J.J. Abrams from Episode 9. This was something that popped up last week, and I wanted to keep it on here just because the petition is still there. It's acquired quite a few different signatures. Pulling up right as of right now, it has reached 4,728 supporters. I am not one who is signing this. That's nothing. 4,000 supporters is not much, but I will say this. I personally am a fan of J.J. Abrams. I like The Force Awakens. I know some people are like, oh, it's too much like the original trilogy. But, at the same time, like, he did a good job. Like, it was a solid film. I've rewatched The Force Awakens probably more often than the original trilogy, like, in the last couple months lately. I think it's also because I feel like it's an easier one to get people into because it tells a complete story. You don't have to know a bunch of backstory, and it does pique people's interest. So I'm happy with what J.J. did, so I'm excited to see him helm Episode 9. What do you guys think about this? Are you going to join the petition and try to get him removed, or are you okay with it and you're like, yeah, I'm not going to sign?
Out of all the things to petition against, I feel like this is it's certainly not the top pick. Like, I feel like there's so many other things people should be worried about than J.J. Abrams directing the second Star Wars movie.
Yeah, I agree. I was kind of taken aback by the fact that they were
that
yeah
angry.
That they were that angry. I'm like, oh, okay, like when it was announced, I have like one buddy at work who's kind of into Star Wars, and I told him I was like, oh man, we got a new announcement about this, and he's like, we were both kind of like, yeah, that's a director, that's a person to choose. Like, it wasn't
it really was the safest choice. Yeah, like, if it wasn't going to be, like, someone that they've worked with, like, if it wasn't going to be Rian Johnson, who's obviously doing episode 8, if it wasn't going to be, like, Gareth Edwards, you know, it was going to be someone they've worked with. Like, my hopes had been, like, maybe they'd bring George back and, like, reel him in and have someone work with him and, like, be like, George, you closed out this trilogy. Like, you started it and you closed it. Like, it'd be fun. But I don't think it would be, you know, I didn't think it would be him. Like, that was a long shot. But you just never knew.
So I believe George said that he wanted, if he were ever to come back for one, it would be episode 9.
It would have been episode 9, yeah. So that's why I said, like, they might be able to. My only, because, like, I didn't think it would happen mainly because he's not in charge anymore. He'd have to answer people. So, you know, I'm okay with, like I said, I was okay with, you know, JJ's choice. I'm happy with it. I'm not we need to remove him, because I think he'll close out the trilogy really well. And especially, like, right...
I would be surprised, sorry to interrupt, if George ended up getting... If he did some work and ended up getting, like, a co-credit. Just on this film.
Well, he still gets a credit on all the films because of being the creator, but...
I mean, as a director. But yeah, he is always credited as a creator. And he may always be credited as... a writer, because he is the universe
the
creator.
Treatments. Nah, he's not credited as a writer typically, just as the creator of the story. But I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they brought him in to do something, or he made a Stan Lee style kind of appearance in the final film or something.
He should. I know he's not really into that, but I think he should.
Well, he says he's moved on, but who knows? Anyway, so yeah, so fans are seeking to move JJ. If you want to remove J.J. Abrams, by all means, there'll be a link in the show notes so you can click on it. I'm not clicking on it and signing it, but yeah.
In all honesty, I really don't think it's going to be that effective.
Yeah,
anyway.
Change.org, you know, 5,000, it's not even at 5,000 signatures, but 5,000 signatures in the scheme of Star Wars, that's kind of low. But, you know, who knows? Maybe it'll make Kathleen Kennedy think about something. Anyway, moving on to the next bit of news. This was something I was, like, beyond ecstatic about. So, there is reportedly reports, you know, I guess that's probably not the best way to say this, but supposedly Darth Vader will be in a part of the Han Solo film. So there's that. Now I'm okay. I'm completely okay with this, because Darth Vader is there during this time. Darth Vader's there during this time period. All right, and it's Ron Howard, and I love Ron Howard already. Like this is just making, like, that Han Solo film, you know, sound that much better. But maybe it's like the Jumping the Shark type thing. And again, Ron Howard would know all about that because he was on the same show as the Fonz, who did Jump the Shark. So, but. Yeah, but it might be one of those things where, like, I'd be okay with, you know, showing Vader, you know, just in passing. You know, because we know Vader made it to Rebels, Star Wars Rebels. We saw him interact with our Rebels crew. We saw him interact with it. This is taking place during the same time. You know, and we also know that our Rebels crew knew Lando Calrissian. You know, so it's all these things where... And, you know, so there is definitely a possibility that they might have had a run-in with Vader. You know, people know who he is. He's, you know, this terrible, you know... black clad, you know, I don't want to call him a monster because he's kind of awesome, but he is kind of a monster, just like slaying people. But yeah, you know, he is an iron fist of the Empire, you know, and that's what he does. So it wouldn't be surprised if some smugglers who are up to not necessarily no good, but, you know, to things that are frowned upon by the Empire, who knows if, you know, Vader might come across them.
Well, you know? I suppose it makes sense because, I believe at the start of New Hope, Han is in deep water with Jabba, and Jabba is probably either trying to stay out of Vader's eye as much as humanly possible, or
Well, yeah, and it's also, remember, like, and that's exactly it. He's in hot water with Jabba because he dropped his cargo and ran. Like, he literally, you know, dropped his. So who's to say that that part, you know, in A New Hope is not because Han Solo had a run-in with Vader and he's just like, drop this and get the heck out of Dodge, him and Chewie. And, you know, it, they might not even have a face-to-face with Vader, but Vader could be in his, you know, the executor or something like that. It could be like a, such a subtle cameo that it's not going to take away from the movie. Who knows?
I would not want Han and Darth to come face-to-face in this prequel because, or this solo movie, because it would, I feel, take away from the storyline of A New Hope. But I could definitely see how Vader's men would, like, they could meet Han. That would be effective.
Yeah, maybe a Death Trooper would meet Han or something like that, and they get out in Vader's capital ship, and you see him standing looking over it. You know, who knows? I'm okay with it. Like, I would just love to see Vader in the film, because I think it'd just, like, tie all of the things together even more. But that's me. I'm a fan of it, you know.
Like, I want to reserve judgment until I've seen the movie, but I would have kind of preferred if it was Solo from, like, I don't mind there being, like, hints or mentions, but I was, like, the way I'm picturing the movie right now, I would have preferred if it had been Darth Vader less, but I'm not really shocked that this is a thing that might be
you
happening.
Wanted the only tie-in back to the originals to be Lando.
Yeah, like I don't mind them being like, oh yeah, remember when we did this, or yeah, I heard that this happened over here, and it basically alluding to another storyline, but I was kind of hoping it would be a literal solo movie spin-off. Yeah.
Oh, he's going Solo. Yeah, we'll see. You know, again, here's the thing is, I feel like I'm the only one on this podcast who has, like, high hopes for the Solo film.
I'm cautiously ambitious.
See, I'm excited for it, because I think it'll be good. But especially when you have, like, people saying, this is the best Star Wars film to date, you know, but then again, they're the actors in it. You know, maybe it's because of the best, because they're in it, who knows. But I'm excited for it, and we'll see. Like, I will say, seeing the pictures of young Han Solo, Alden Ehrenreich, I'm kind of like, that's not Harrison Ford.
Yeah, like, that's maybe tough.
Maybe with Chewie standing beside him and the Millennium Falcon as a backdrop, I might believe it a little bit more. And, like, honestly, with good direction, like, I get, like, I don't think they're gonna, I don't think Kathleen Kennedy and Lucasfilm's gonna drop, you know, release a complete failure of a film. So I think it's gonna be at least okay. They've fired four directors about it, so it's okay. Anyway, let's move on. So the next bit of news is actually something that I am giddy about, and I think is hilarious. And I really wish Danya was here on the show for this one. It's about the Porgs, and
the Porgs. Oh,
who doesn't love the Porgs? Because apparently they are delicious. So Porgs. Porgs are both friends in food. So apparently, originally when we saw the Porgs, we saw them in the video of the behind the scenes, and everyone thought they were, like, the cutest thing ever. And there's now Porgs, you know, plush dolls and ones that are essentially Furbies. So originally thought of as Lucasfilm's essentially adorable marketing technique, akin to Ewoks with feathers or a small army of warm-blooded BB-8s. It turns out Porgs are nothing but food. So Luke Skywalker and the caretakers of Ahch-To apparently run around the island hunting Porgs. And these little creatures, dumb, wide-eyed look, are probably a sign of their constant panic that they're going to get eaten. So I am beyond ecstatic to see how these Porgs are played out, because there's been pictures of Porgs on the Millennium Falcon with Chewie. So I'm wondering if they just, like, take them as, like, a light speed snack or something like that.
Oh my god.
What?
Fast food?
Fast food. Get it? Light speed food. There you go.
Yikes.
For Patreons, I'm actually posting a picture from one of the books that came out on the Journey to the Star Wars, The Last Jedi. It's under the Star Wars Made Easy book. But it's the title is called Luke's Island Island Highlights. And you have the caretakers, which are strange dynamic creatures. The caretakers look after the crumbling ruins that dot the island. Porgs. Small bird-like porgs are the island's most adorable inhabitants. Cute? Question mark. Definitely. Tasty? Question mark. Maybe. Like, come on.
Nom 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 nom.
You what? My vision of them have shifted slightly. Like, because apparently they're food, and they have this, like, wide-eyed look, and for some reason I picture them, like, behaving like lemmings, like, just following each other offside of cliff. I kind of picture them like dodos.
Yeah, I can see that. And so, now, I will tell you this. Because I am, you know, a father now, there's lots and lots of different things. I have this wonderful book called Chewie and the Porgs, which is this really nice kind of... you know, it's the, one of the golden books, like, you know, you guys remember the golden books, like the books that had like the golden like tape on the side to read.
Yes.
I have like the I'm a Hero one that like shows like Luke and BB-8 and everyone being a hero. But there's now Chewie and the Porgs. And as I look at the cover when I talk about this, I just feel like
it sounds like a band.
It feels like Chewie and the Porgs definitely sounds like a band. So someone make that. But I feel like it's super dark. Like Chewie's going to be like, come here, little Porgs. And just like gobble them all up. Anyway,
like kind of like the beginning of not the beginning, but part of Alice in Wonderland when there's the walrus and the carpenter, and they lead the oysters out of the ocean so they can eat them.
That's exactly it. But it's porgs on Oc 2. Ah, those sweet little porgs. They don't know what they're going into.
Does that mean Star Wars Land is going to have, like, porg burgers?
Oh, my God! No, they're going to have pork tenders! They're going to be like chicken! Pork tenders! Pork tenders with Octu sauce.
A porg-shaped cake.
Porg wings.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. This is going to be bad.
The possibilities are endless.
Yes, they really are. They really are. So, beyond the porgs... If you want to get to something that's not, well, I guess porks are just delicious. But if you want to get to something...
Yeah, now I'm getting hungry.
I know, right? Like, man, now I want fried chicken. Anyway, beyond the porks, there is a new YouTube series from Star Wars and IBM called Science and Star Wars. They're going to tackle things like real-life lightsabers and blasters and droids. Actually, their most recent episode is How Close Are We to Actually Having Real-Life Droids? So it's definitely something you want to take a look at it. The first episode is all about lightsabers and the science of it. It's about a 5-minute video, but it's pretty cool just like seeing like the stuff they do. They take this fake, you know, a scientific lightsaber and they try to cut through a steel door, kind of like Qui-Gon Jinn did in Phantom Menace, if you remember that scene on...
Yes. Yeah,
or even Vader in Rogue One.
Above Naboo?
Yeah, above Naboo. On the, what do you call it, the trade ship. But yeah, so it's really cool. So they talk about science and everything, and, you know, it's definitely worth, like, if you're a science geek or you're just a geek in general and you want to see, like, I really want a lightsaber, or if you just ever really wanted a lightsaber, like everyone who's listening to this podcast, I'm sure, definitely take a look at the Science and Star Wars web series. It's going to be released weekly, so it's pretty cool.
Not gonna lie, I watched the trailer for it and my mouth dropped open and I was like, yes, this is what I didn't know I wanted.
I know, right? Like, here's the thing is, like, I'm a pretty big science fan, like, you know, science, math, science, like, that was my STEM, was my area of expertise before I went to film school. Like, my parents were comprised that I went to film school instead. But, you know, at the same time, like, who didn't want a lightsaber growing up? And so, like, science and Star Wars tells us how close we are, and I can't wait for the droid one. They released the trailer for the droid one. But they haven't released the episode, so I can't wait to see like how close we are to having like a real life droid, especially since like you already have the Sphero, like BB-8 and BB-9E and R2-D2, and I'm like, come on, can we just like make them a little bit more like programmed and a little bit more AI in them, so that way, you know, I can have my own little R2-D2 follow me around the house.
I feel like
that's all I want in life.
I feel like I want an actual BB-8. Doesn't necessarily have to serve a purpose other than make me laugh.
That's all it has to be. It's just has to, like, be able to tell me jokes. Yeah. Like, think of it. It could be like with all the virtual assistants. Like, you have Cortana, you have Siri, you have Alexa. You know, what else am I missing? You have Hey Google. You know, Hey Google. You have Google. Their own. What is Google called theirs? It's just Google, right? I don't know. But you have all the AI, all the virtual assistants on your phone, watches, you know, whatever, iPads, you know, tablets and stuff. Like, can't they just put one of those inside a robot that does nothing but like, answer those questions for me and follow me around? Like, even if I have to wear a watch, like a tracker, so it follows me, and if it can just like figure out how to go, even, doesn't care if it goes upstairs or not, but like when I come downstairs, it's there, it's like a Roomba type thing, and be like, hey, BB9E, what's the weather like today? And then it responds, even if it doesn't even say something, and it just responds like on a watch or something, and I read the, you know, the words. Like, that would make me happy. Tell me a joke.
Wouldn't it be great if it was a Roomba at the same time?
Oh, that'd be amazing.
So as it's,
that'd be it so was a, cool.
As it's following you around like, the house, it's vacuuming.
Oh, geez. So now it vacuums and it answers questions for me. That would be awesome.
Yes.
Oh, there you go.
Best roommate ever.
Seriously. Oh, man. Anyway, yeah. So that's that. Now, I will tell you this last bit. I don't know if you guys have got a chance to do this because I put this in a little bit before the show. John Boyega talks about the new Battlefront 2. So it's a new trailer that comes out. It doesn't hit consoles until November 17th. But John Boyega goes through all the new features, and boy, are there a ridiculous amount of new features inside Battlefront 2. We've talked about it previously that there's going to be more, and we were a little worried, or some of us were worried about it, myself included. But I will tell you this, for the most part, like the amount of content that's in it, I am beyond stacked for it, especially the single player mode. You know, we talked about Inferno Squad here on the show, and just being able to play as Iden Versio and kind of going on through a single player story, I'm excited for that. The new space battles look just absolutely awesome, and I think they got John Boyega to simply narrate this and talk about it because he was very vocal about Battlefront 1 kind of sucking because there wasn't much you can do except multiplayer. So, what do you guys think about this video?
Well, as somebody who never finds the time to play video games, I was still intrigued, and like basically it was, I do not blame anybody for wanting to play this. It looks super cool.
Well, yeah, like it looks even, so like here's the thing, Battlefront 1 looked so beautiful. Like it looked really good. Battlefront 2 looks even better. They've taken the time to upgrade the engine and like it just looks that much better. To give you a perspective, like in the original Battlefront, there was 4 locations. Battlefront 2, there's 18. Heroes, there were 6 originally when it first launched. In Battlefront 2, there's 14. There was 11 different vehicles and ships in Battlefront, the original one. Now there's 39 different ones, which is kind of ridiculous. So it all starts like on Kamino with like the clone era. Then it goes to Yavin 4. You know, then you get the battle over Fondor and Starkiller Base. So it's all three eras. So you have the prequel era, you have the original trilogy, and you have the new sequel trilogy, if you will, all of it, which is really cool because there's also specifically, of course, he talks about Finn, his character. There are specific characters for the sequel trilogy with Rey and Finn, and Rey is rocking an awesome blue lightsaber. So I'm excited to play Battlefront 2, and I think the guys from JotoCast, myself, and probably Eric at some point in time will probably stream this so you guys can watch us play or just tell you all about it because it looks awesome. Yes?
I'm not going to lie. I'd want to play Darth Maul just so I can whirl around a double lightsaber.
Just spin around in circles with it. Whee!
Yep.
Twirly.
If I can even manage that part. There's a reason why I don't play video games. I'm not very good at them.
Well, you know,
I'm
the
terrible
nice part
at the flying part or the driving part. That's why I really haven't done Battlefront. But well, I love looking at it. It's beautiful. Well,
yeah, I love watching people play video games. I'm just terrible at doing it.
Well,
myself.
And so here's the thing is the problem with the original Battlefront, Donya has been vocal on it. Like, she never really felt comfortable playing because if you played, like Battlefront 1, you had to kind of play online. In Battlefront 2, there's two single player modes. There's a single player story mode that you go through a story and you play as Iden Versio. So there's like that whole game you can just play through. And if you suck, well, oh well. Like no one else sees you except you and whoever's watching you play, you know, there. And then there's also a single player and co-op mode where you can play all the different modes against AI. So you're not actually online. You're not playing against other people. You're not making your team fail for just being really bad. You can just play and experience and learn and get better and everything. And then there's all the online modes where you play with everybody else. You know, there's big 20 versus 20 maps and stuff like that. And they've also brought like in class-based stuff. So anyone who's played things like Destiny or an MMO where different classes perform different tasks, the same thing is true here. Or even like something like Overwatch. The same thing, there's different classes. So there's four different classes. You know, there's usually a support class, a tank class, and just a damage class. And they all have different abilities and different star cards. So like everything has been changed to be better gameplay. So I'm really, really excited to do stuff like this too. So yeah, Battlefront 2 looks like it should be good. I will say I was a little disappointed because I bought the pre-order for Battlefront 1. I got the big expensive pack, and on PC, there was like nobody playing after the first 3 months. So, yeah. And actually, we just had a Patreon talk about he's much better at playing a support class. And I will tell you, the support, I can't say too much because I'm actually under NDA. I did get to play the alpha of Battlefront 2 on PC. I think it's because I spent all that money on Battlefront 1. And so they felt bad and EA gave it to me. But the support classes, as well as the tank classes and the specialist classes, like they all, that's what it was, the fourth class of specialist, they're all really good. Like the specialist class is a class I'm never good at. That's usually the sniper class. I'm horrible at sniper, but I know people are really good at it. So that's like the sniper class. The support classes, like I love healing. I love being able to support my team because if I can't shoot people, I can keep those people alive and they can shoot them. And, you know, we win that way. So it's really cool that there's a class system. It's really funny playing it as different classes as battle droids. Like that's as much as I can tell you, I think, because all the battle droids look the same except like some paint and they all say Roger, Roger. But they're different classes, so that's kind of cool. Anyway, anything else about Battlefront 2, guys?
No.
All right. So it's time for our spotlight topic. That's no moon. I mean, the Death Star. So the Death Star, real quick, we first see the Death Star in episode 2. Well, I guess chronologically, that's where you first see it. But we also see it in, you know, A New Hope is the first time in 77. But the first time we see it is in episode 2, Attack of the Clones, as plans by Poggle the Lesser given to Count Dooku. Obviously, there's been no construction of this, but it was plans that the Geonosians had. During the construction of episode 3 and beyond that, that's when the construction was made. In fact, for those who watch Star Wars Rebels, which is a phenomenal show, and this is the last season coming up, Caitlin, I know you've caught up completely. You know, there's been a couple episodes talking about Geonosis and something being built over Geonosis. Well, guess what? That was the Death Star, and it was the Geonosians who were actually building, you know, the hive of flying creatures were building the Death Star. But we see significantly more construction of it at the end of episode 3 when Vader and Tarkin are on the ship and we see them it building as, you know, the credits come up. You guys all remember that? Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
At the end of episode 3. Cool. And then we really get to see it go from Geonosis to Jedha in Rogue One. So in Rogue One is probably the first time we really get to see the Death Star and get to experience it as the weapon that it is. So before Rogue One, all we knew was that the Death Star destroyed a single planet, Alderaan, which was a peaceful planet, but and also a very wealthy planet that you learn in Leia, Princess of Alderaan. But this is a super weapon created by, I guess you would say, the ruling government of the galaxy. In A New Hope, they talk about it's fear of this battle station that'll keep the local, you know, rulers in line. What do you guys think about this? Like, what would possess? Well, forget about Emperor Palpatine, but just like think about, like, can you fathom a weapon that's so powerful that can destroy an entire planet, and just like having it be like the whip that keeps people in line? Like, just think about that.
That's not a whip.
All right, the shotgun,
like
the shotgun that keeps.
No, it's essentially like a nuclear bomb. It just devastates everything. So, like, that's. Like, okay, so reading, like, the Wikipedia article in regards to it, like, it does quote Krennic. And he says, I'm going to cut it short just because it's a very long quote, but it's violence is hardwired into most of us, and there's no eliminating the impulse. Not with an army of stormtroopers or a fleet of star destroyers. That's why we've embarked on a path to a different solution. We have a chance to forge a peace that will endure longer than the Republic was in existence. I'm like, this is not a different path. You just found a bigger, better weapon. Earlier in the quote, he talks about if you dig a hole deep enough, you're going to find skulls. Well, I guess you're not going to find skulls because you're obliterating the planet.
I know, right? The thing is, this is the very first of its kind. Well, the first of its kind that is in canon, the extended universe, and I have to mention this for those who are EU fans, there were lots of other planet-destroying, really massive, bad weapons. There was weapons that the Sith before, when you get into that era, super weapons made, which was similar to the Death Star, which plays perfectly, it plays perfectly to Palpatine wanting to build this. There was also other things like Sun Crusher and stuff like that, that was in the kind of post-trilogy era. EU. So there's definitely other super weapons, but in canon, the Death Star is the first known super weapon of its kind. So much so that, early on when we first see it in A New Hope, look at the size. Well, he's going to that small moon is what Luke says. Well, it's not a small moon. It's a station. And Han's line's like, it's too big to be a space station, but it's not. It's the Death Star. Or officially known as the DS-1 Orbital Battle Station. Death Star.
Well, and again, I got, I think, a little obsessed with the details of it. Because there is almost 350,000 Imperial Army and Navy. There is almost 26,000 Stormtroopers. And there's 2 million personnel on the Death Star.
Yeah, so that just puts it in perspective. It is a planet, right? It's the size of a small moon.
Essentially.
It's a small moon, and it's a station that can control and destroy planets. So, when you think about that, they use it in Rogue One kind of nonchalantly. And we also learned that it doesn't have to fire at full strength to actually destroy the planet, which is what we originally were meant to believe in A New Hope. Right? That's what we all assumed. That's what I assumed the Death Star did, was it destroyed planets. We saw it destroy Alderaan, and it was going to destroy Yavin 4, the moon of Yavin, because that's where the Rebel base was. So, in Rogue One, we see it, the first test fire of it, the first complete, the battle station is complete, and the first test fire is actually on Jedha City itself. And they simply only used one reactor. So I can only imagine how many reactors it actually has to be able to produce enough damage to blow up an entire planet. But in Rogue One, we saw it take out Jedha City. And later on, it's explained in, I think actually, Princess Leia, Princess of Alderaan, that Jedha's destruction was actually reported as a mining accident to the galaxy at wide. It was in Leia, Princess of Alderaan. She didn't understand that, what happened at Jedha was not actually a mining accident, but actually the Death Star doing its thing. But it's able to take out entire cities. And I will say, just looking at it from, Tarkin and Krennic's view, in space and seeing Jedha City destroyed, it definitely looks just like you said, Caitlin, like a nuclear bomb going off, that mushroom cloud of just taking out a whole section of the planet. So what do you guys think about it just being able to do multiple things? We know the second Death Star was able to fire at ships, which is what we saw, in the battle over Endor. But this first one definitely had the capability to do probably that, or just less destruction and more specific. But as a kind of that, big stick, if you will, that the Empire's holding. It obviously didn't keep everybody in line because the Rebellion fought against it. But do you think their goal of order with the Death Star would have actually... could have possibly, worked?
Probably.
Yes and no. Because at the same time, it would terrify people knowing that all they have to do is, you pissed me off? Well, now I'm going to blow up your entire planet. Or your city. Not that that's any, not as worse, but... helps if I use proper English. Anyways, But at the same time, I feel like if you overstep, like, there, I feel like there's also this line where if you become too violent and tyrannical, that that's when more people are going to seek an alternative.
Yeah, and, you know, I will say we learned a lot more about the Death Star or Project Stardust in Rogue One than I think we learned anywhere else. You know, obviously in A New Hope, it was just this big planet-destroying super weapon, but in Rogue One, we learned, you know, that it took a while to be built. And in the Galen Erso book, we also learned, you know, the research and everything that went into it before, and that Galen was, you know, essentially forced to help make the super weapon because of his background in, you know, lasers and kyber crystals and everything. So it's one.
Well,
go.
Like, I know it's the Empire, so they have the manpower, they have the money that would be required to make this, but who's to stop somebody else who doesn't have a lot of money to make a smaller version, eventually make it bigger? Like, I feel like it's just escalating an arms race, essentially.
Well, and that's what it comes down to. You know, if you look at it, they made it not only bigger or smaller or bigger, like the second Death Star was bigger than the first one, and then Starkiller Base was even bigger, and it destroyed not just one planet, but whole systems. You know, it destroyed the entire Hosnian system through, I guess, it was different, but it was subspace, like, blast, whatever, but it literally was destroying, you know, it's essentially like the Death Star. You know, I think that's also some of the criticism of Force Awakens, that it was just like the Death Star, except it was on a simply larger magnitude. But I think that also puts the First Order in very good perspective. Like, if they were, when you look at someone like Kylo Ren, who idolizes Darth Vader, and, you know, the First Order, who wants order just like the Empire did, you know, that's what their goal was. They wanted order. And that's what they, that's why they built the Death Star, you know, to keep, you know, they said it in that conference room, making fun of Vader and his belief in that hokey religion that is the Force, was like, fear this battle station is going to be the new ultimate power. It's going to keep the local, you know, governors in line. And obviously, I don't know if it could keep anyone in line, but it definitely sparked that rebellion. People had to stand up to it. And you have someone like Galen Erso, who was forced into working into it, and the entire time was planning to sabotage it. Obviously, he couldn't sabotage it to where he can take it out himself, but he built a weakness into it that none of them knew about. So it was really interesting to see that, you know, or to think about that, is something being such a powerful thing. Like you mentioned, 2 million, you know, crew members on this ship, and no one knows about a weakness that was built in at the very beginning by one person who knew that this was wrong.
That's 2 million personnel. There's still tens and hundreds of thousands of Army, Navy, and Stormtroopers.
Yeah, like, there's just so many people on it, and it's like, that's the point. Like, you know, when you look at the crew, I think the total crew number is like a million. Like, again, this is from the Wikipedia, but like, there's over 1 million crew members on it.
And I got a little, like I said, obsessed with the, like, logistics of it, but they actually had to come up with orbital shuttles to get people from, like, the thing had hemispheres, for God's sakes.
Yeah, that's huge. Well,
like, that's how big it was. Well, they had to be like, oh, this is located in the northern hemisphere. They, like, it's in space. There is no north or south, but they had to create it so that people knew what direction they were going. They had to create orbital shuttles just to get from A to B.
Yeah, well, think about it. Like, if I'm at the top, you know, I'm right above the dish, and be like, hey, guys, meet me in the bar above, you know, the death bar, you know, instead of Death Star, the death bar, right above the orbital dish. And you have the really cool job, like Finn, at the, you know, janitorial thing, and you're at the bottom of the ship. Like, that would be a lot of flights of stairs to try to climb up, since it's the size of a moon. You know, it's like going from California to maybe, you know, England or something like that. It's like a good trek there.
It's 168 kilometers in diameter.
Oh, geez.
Sorry, 160 kilometers in diameter.
And that,
like I said, logistics got a little
obsessed. Well, and that's the thing, is I think that's the thing that we miss out the most on in the films, because we see it from afar and you see the whole thing. Like, think about that really cool shot in Rogue One where it eclipses the sun and you just see this really cool shot of the Death Star. But to me, like, even thinking about that scene, I don't even... It doesn't dawn on me how big the Death Star was. Same thing when, like, Luke and, you know, 33 fighters from the Rebellion. 33 starfighters go up against this planet-sized thing, moon-sized thing, in hopes that they are able to take out this super weapon that has been, that a single little, defect has been planted. 33 ships. And that's just, it's such a big thing. So it's really daunting. So for me, it's one of those things where it's definitely interesting to think that this was the first of many. Hopefully we don't see any more in these. Again, not just as a, not just as an ethical thing, but just like story thing too. Hopefully we won't see too many more of these circular death weapons.
I'm thinking, because, okay, if both Death Stars took how many years to build, and then the planet took probably even further to build, and this coming movie is supposed to take place like immediately after.
Yeah, you won't see anything like this, or even in episode 9.
Unless they were already starting to build the second one.
Yeah, and I think when you think about, I alluded to this in one episode, that Starkiller Base, I feel, is the planet Ilum. Because if you look at any of the, if you Google Starkiller Base is Ilum, you'll see a bunch of like conspiracy theories about it too. Basically, they're the exact same size. They're also in the same space region, like they're in the same spot in the Star Wars galaxy. Ilum is no longer on the current map, but Ilum was on the old EU one. And Ilum is a known canon planet because the Padawans go to it in Star Wars in the Clone Wars series. So Ilum is a planet, but if you think about it, that Ilum would have also been mined, because that was a planet with a lot of kyber crystals. Ilum would have been mined. And one of our patrons talked about Ilum being was mentioned in the Ahsoka book too, about being strip mined. But if you think about it, like, if it was being stripped by, just briefly mentioned in the Ahsoka book about it, if you think about the mining stuff on Jeddah for kyber crystals for the Death Star and even the second Death Star, and where else are they going to get them? Well, they know they're on Ilum. They're going to mine it there. So if you think about Starkiller Base, how it literally has a trench running through almost the entire planet, they've already done half the work of hollowing out that planet for mining for the Death Stars. Why not take that planet and turn it into its own weapon? So maybe that might be an After Dark episode that I end up going really, really crazy theory stuff. Talk about, and if you look on the maps, they're in the same spot. Who knows? But they have yet to officially announce it that they are one and the same. But yeah, so that's getting off topic of the Death Star.
It just kind of reminds me when we were talking about... I don't know what the topic was, but we ended up talking about when Obi-Wan goes to speak to Yoda and the kids, and because he can't find the Geonosis on the map. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is a similar...
Oh, it's the same thing. I'm sure it is. It's like, Master, someone's removed it from the directory. That's exactly it. They put Starkiller Base there instead of Ilum, because it's... think about it. If it's six... If when the Empire was around, they wanted to remove all Jedi things, I can imagine Ilum being removed from, the map system, right? And then when the First Order takes over, along with the Republic, they build Starkiller Base, and that becomes known as Starkiller Base, and no longer as Ilum. Like, it's very easy to believe that they simply just supplemented the name. Kind of like if you go back to the Clone Wars series, for the longest time, the Sith homeworld was known as Korriban. With a K. In the video games and everything, like Star Wars The Old Republic, which we talked about on here, the Sith homeworld was called Korriban, but in the Clone Wars series, they changed it to Moriban with an M, because George Lucas felt that Korriban and Coruscant would be too confusing, even though one's a C, one's a K, the sounds are too similar for kids, so he changed it, and Dave Filoni's argument was, well, think about it, like, thousands of years have passed since anyone's been to the Sith homeworld, so they're known by different names, and it makes sense. Like, not everyone calls something the same name, even in different languages. So, I mean, again, this is millions of different races and species and stuff like that. So it makes sense that they can change the name, and vice versa. I think Ilum and Starkiller Base
are the same. Well, yeah, like Istanbul and Constantinople.
Yeah. Istanbul is not Constantinople. There you go. But yes, yeah. So it's the first. So let's get back to the Death Star. Let's bring it back in, Caitlin, Gina. We're going to come back.
Oh, can I just one more thing? Can I nerd out and be like, bring it back to the news article when we were talking about the
porks being
the TV, the YouTube? Talk about
tasty porks.
No, well, if we want to continue talking about that, we can. But I meant the YouTube, the Star Wars episodes. Can we have one where they discuss how they would possibly take a planet and move it around?
Well, yeah,
that's what they're doing with Killer Base. I want to know how they're doing that.
Yeah, well, you know, it moves. Like, it definitely has to move. Like, it has to move. You know, the ship.
Yeah, like it's one thing for them to build a Death Star from scratch and make it so that it can move. I want to know how they take a pre-existing planet and make that move.
Okay, yeah. That's
okay, true. I want to hear that. All right,
we might. You're right. How do they make Starkiller Base move? I cannot speak to that.
That's why I want the Star Wars TV. What was it called again? Science and Star Wars. I want to see that.
Yeah, we'll see if they do that. I'm sure they will at some point in time. Yeah, so Death Star. Obviously, it was taken out by 33 ships. Luke Skywalker specifically is the one who did it. But, you know, if it wasn't for the people on Rogue One who were able to go ahead and get those plans to... It's really interesting that Rogue One was actually created to simply answer this... The one thing of how did they know there were, you know, secret? How did we know there were secret plans? How did we get those plans for this exhaust port, right? And thinking about like how they were able to analyze them and find out this one little tiny thing, an exhaust port. Like, who would have, like, think about what an exhaust port is in the first place. An exhaust port is something that goes out, not something that can go in, right? At least that's, am I thinking of this right? So, like, why would we have an exhaust port be the thing that kills, you know, the entire Death Star?
Well, especially when because on the Death Star they have 8 firing chamber arrays that like basically kills the planet, and if they're not aligned properly, the kyber crystals burn out, overload, and then dangerous levels of waste go back into the Death Star. So basically all they had to do was rearrange the alignment of those things, and it would, like, the problem would have solved itself. They wouldn't have been able to get at the rebel base, and they probably would have ended up, I don't know if it would have exploded or just like gassed up so everybody died.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things that would have that would cause it. But yeah, I don't know. The Death Star is just such a big thing, and I was making lemon pepper porgs. I'm sorry, I got distracted when we talked about porgs. They're just tasty. they're just tasty. Sorry. It's dinner time here, and I was thinking about lemon pepper porgs. I mean, chicken. You know. There we go.
So I'm going to make some pork chops for dinner, too, so it's okay.
Sorry.
You said you're doing pork chops or pork chops? Pork chops?
Pork chops.
Oh gosh!
Poor tenderloins.
Oh boy! This
episode is but all about funny, porks. Funny story. Because in Canada, there's a lot of, particularly Quebec in Northern Ontario, there's a lot of French-speaking communities, and Kentucky Fried Chicken doesn't translate to French, so it's actually KFP or like it's some variation of that, so it can be Kentucky Fried Pork.
Oh, there you go. That's awesome.
Love it.
Yeah, so, you know, this is also interesting to think about. The Death Star not only had the ability to destroy, you know, a planet, but it also had a ridiculous amount of firepower around it. Think about, again, in A New Hope, the ships that are attacking. Again, there's only 33 of them, Red Squadron and Gold Squadron. But when you think about the ships that were attacking, that they were going to attack, there was, you know, there was towers, there had a full fleet of TIE fighters on it. Like, this was a thing to be reckoned with. And it's just, wow. I'm in awe. Just, like, I'm looking at the picture of the plans from the Death Star right now. And it's just, like, thinking about, like, it is such a big thing to come up against something like that. And to have a single goal for it. So, it's one of those things where I think if it wasn't for Luke and the Force, I don't think that I think they were right. Tarkin was right that this would become keep the local governors in line. It would have probably been a very interesting galaxy if the rebellion hadn't succeeded there. Agreed? No?
Agreed.
Oh, Caitlin, now you're getting me confused with KFP.
Actually, I got it wrong. It was PFK.
Oh, yep.
So it'd be pork fried chicken or Kentucky.
Yep, there you go. And I'm in Kentucky right now, so there you go, porgs. This episode is not about porgs. This episode is all about the battle station known as the Death Star that has that amazing sound that you know when it's about to fire. But yeah,
that's what we should do for Hype After Dark. Sorry, wrong podcast. After Dark special is porg recipes.
I will gladly make a porg. All right, so we're going to come back to the porgs later in another episode, but we'll come back to them after.
I think you're going to have a series about porgs.
Oh, just about the porgs. But anything else about the Death Star? You know, like I said, we've talked about it being created by the Geonosians. That's where it started. We saw that, you know, in Rogue One, or in Star Wars Rebels, that they saw that it was being developed. We saw in Rogue One it being almost completed. Its first test firing. It's talked about it destroying Alderaan. It's interesting. It's interesting that Dantooine wasn't used as an example, but Alderaan was, and Alderaan was one of the core worlds. So it definitely is one of those things where Tarkin chose Alderaan not only because he knew that there was some rebel sympathies there, but also because with a planet like that, it would definitely, if you think about like, if think about the world here. If a known first world country, not a third world country, but a first world country, I'm going to choose one arbitrarily. I'm going to choose Canada. Maybe Caitlin's from Canada.
Hey.
But we'll say a first world country like Canada was completely destroyed by one power or an alien species. Like, do you think most of the other world would fall in line or would they rebel? What do you guys think?
I would hope they would rebel.
I would hope they would rebel too. I like Canada too.
I would hope they would rebel too. I would hope for a rebellion.
See, and that's the thing is, like, if you think about it, like, logically here, like, if one, like, first world country was destroyed, like, completely, like Alderaan was, you think that other people wouldn't fall in line. Like, it just doesn't seem, maybe this is George Lucas writing, but it seems like it would just simply add more people to say, like, all right, the Empire is out of line with this type of thing. Like, what gave them the right to destroy an entire planet with zero warning? Like, they didn't even tell the people of Alderaan that they're going to be destroyed. Like, remember Obi-Wan Kenobi's, like, millions of people just cried out and then suddenly were silenced. Like, the only person from Alderaan who knew what was going to happen was Princess Leia, and she was pleading, like, no, they're peaceful. Like, they were a peaceful country, which is maybe why I chose Canada. But,
aww.
See, it was a good thing that you got destroyed. I mean...
It was kind of a compliment.
Somehow, right?
It was a backhanded one.
You get gravy fries. Anyway, poutine.
It was a double-edged lightsaber.
Oh, there you go. Ooh. I think a lightsaber can cut from any edge. But yeah, like the Empire doing something like that. Think about it. Just take a step back. The Empire destroyed an entire planet with billions of people on it. Billions of sentient people who added to the galaxy with zero warning. I can't imagine that helping their cause without sparking more rebellion across the galaxy. Saying, you're out of line. This super weapon, this Death Star you have is not something that's going to help. It's going to go ahead and make them go ahead and say, okay, we're going to take our 33 ships and blow it out of the sky. And then they had the daft to create a second one and a third one. Well, Death Star 2 and, you know, Starkiller Base. Now, I will say, one of our patrons just mentioned that it might have worked if the Death Star wasn't destroyed immediately after, at least for a time. Maybe. But I feel like, you know, destroying like a first, you know, a major planet that contributed to rest of the galaxy. And again, I might be a little biased right now because I just finished Leia, Princess of Alderaan, which is a great book. If you have not read it, I definitely encourage it. Claudia Gray, who wrote the Bloodlines Leia book, she's writing all the Leia stuff, and it's just absolutely phenomenal. So I have this very unique perspective on Alderaan right now, because it takes place with Leia being 16 years old and kind of right in that time frame that we see her in Rebels. So it's really awesome. But yeah, so I just can't imagine, you know, the Empire and Tarkin and Krennic and them do, you know, actually making their point that they want to make with the Death Star. But,
well, and technically Alderaan isn't the first planet it destroyed. Like, so one, I imagine they did tests first, so wherever the hell they did that. Then they destroyed the city of Jedha. Then I know nobody else knew about it, but then there's Scarif.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, it's like,
then
they didn't test, like, the only time they tested it, we saw the testing in Rogue One. They tested it on Jedha, and they tested it on Scarif. And then right from Scarif is when it goes to Alderaan. Now, there was testing.
So they went ahead.
There was testing before when, in the Galen Erso book, where they're talking about when he's trying to Project Celestial Power, Galen is trying to use. Now, again, Galen is the good guy here. Even though he's the one that created the Death Star super laser, he's using kyber crystals to generate energy for underdeveloped planets. He wants to generate clean energy, cheap clean energy, that can power whole things. So he's doing research in one area about the energy, and then a companion lab on another planet is actually destroyed because they can't get the form, you know, the calculations correct, and they overuse it and it explodes. But it's not like an actual laser that's shot at it. It's them testing the energy output from the kyber crystal and stuff like that. So they're definitely tested it and stuff like that, and whole, like, you know, encampments have been destroyed. But I don't think it was until Jedha that we actually saw the Death Star itself fire. Because again, remember in Rogue One, we saw the parabolic dish be put in place and everything, and doing its first test fire on Jedha City.
Maybe I'm just thinking that, like, the upper command would have more self-preservation, because if that backfired, like I said, all it took was them being out of line.
Well, yeah, like,
for it to backfire. That, so, like, I feel like the smart person would, like, or maybe it's just the attributes I attribute to the commanders, would have been like, okay, you're going to test this, but we're going to go wait in a ship over here, just in case it backfires.
Yeah, I can see something like that. But, like, imagine this. Like, I'm imagining the Lego version of the Death Star destruction, where, like, so, you know, it's a stormtrooper leans against a crystal right before it fires, and it misses the crystal, and it blows up the inside of the Death Star, because, you know, the Lego stormtrooper. Anyway, any other thoughts on the Death Star, guys? No? Yes?
Nope. No.
Gina, anything? No?
No.
All right. If you have any thoughts on the Death Star or the tasty, tasty porgs, please...
Please feel free...
I know, right? Please feel free to reach out to us. And thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Reach out to us on Twitter at Our Radio Podcast, or on Facebook at facebook.com/Resistance Radio Podcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/Resistance Radio Podcast. As always, I am Mikey B.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Gina.
And remember, porgs are tasty. And may the Force be with you.
And also...